So we're still looking for guests for. I'm going to contact that one podcast, but even then, I'm still looking to to get a good guest group for the Charlton EC Comics horror comics episode.
Yeah. The two suggestions that were given to you, I can tell you are pretty good suggestions, just because.
Well, two out of three.
You don't want Lewis, but
And
yeah.
I think I'll just say it out loud, and I'm not going to explain it to the listeners or go deep into it, but no, it's anyone who wants to suggest I ever contact Lewis for the show, anyone who suggests that he would be a good guest for the show, it's not going to be happening. I'm not going to explain them. I'm not going to explain what sort of blood, good or bad, or etc. is between it. If you want to ask me via private email, you can. If depending on my mood, I might tell you. But I'm just telling you right now, it ain't happening. And the biggest reason I'll give right now is because I want to invite people who actually like comic books on my show.
And appreciate their audiences.
Yes. And that's all I'll say on the subject.
Yeah.
This time.
Now tell us how you really feel.
No, I don't want to go into it. But that's what I want to say, because what happened this morning was I tweeted, "Hey, gonna be doing an EC Comics slash Charlton Comics horror comics flashback episode, looking for guests." And a listener tweeted back and suggested Lewis to be the guest. I'm like, no.
Not just no, hell no.
Well, what I actually said was I am looking for someone who actually knows what Charlton and EC Comics are. But like I said, that's all I'll say on that subject. And I posted the link to the comic list. Are we ready to get started?
Yep.
Pretty much. It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's DeCian, the superhero webcomic. DeCian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. Read it now at DeCian.com. DeCian.com.
Hello and welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about costume design and costume design theory. We have a full panel of talented comic costume designers and artists to talk about this topic. You, of course, know my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
Oh, this is gonna hurt on so many levels.
Yes, also with us is brother from another podcast, TV's Mr. Neil.
Alpha.
Also with us is one of our favorite guests, Kitty Hawk.
Moo! Cosmic power makeup! Oh, wait, wrong show.
Actually, that could kind of work, but
That works.
also with us is comic artist extraordinaire Pablo Prano.
Yes, am!
And as always, we're going to start with the weekly solicitations. So let's see how quickly we can go through this. We'll just talk about some issues we see and recommendations, etc., and feelings. So, Antarctic Press, Gold Diggers 212.
Nice.
Yay!
I'm subscribed to it, so I'm totally getting it.
But you work for Antarctic Press, kind of, so.
For a little while, but I only got the PDFs for.
So there's some technical difficulties with Pablo, so he might be intermittent, and there might be some feedback. We apologize in advance.
He's turning into the drive-through at McDonald's.
And
I said
then,
paradise.
No,
and then.
I hate that movie.
Okay.
I will reach through the internet and strangle you.
Okay.
Oh, finally, I've achieved what Ben has done to me so many times.
So, Avatar Press. I really don't see anything interesting in Avatar Press. George R. R. Martin is doing things that aren't King of Thrones, thus pissing off more fanboys, which I love.
King of Thrones.
Oh, God, no.
Wait, what is up with all this, like, all this sign-in bullshit? Anyway.
So, moving forward, we have some
Funky
still
Winker Bean? What the fuck? Funky Winker Bean.
What do
They're
you say
printing
to
all of that? Like, under fucking, Black
Black
Squirrel
Squirrel,
Books.
yeah.
Well, Funky Winker Bean is the weirdest, like, strip comic of all time. Like, it is so, like, depressing. Anyway, sorry. I just saw that and
Well,
I'm just having
yeah,
flashbacks to the
it's no
cancer saga.
Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers, to say the least. And I grew up reading that shit.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like, there's like a bomb that and a cancer scare and ghosts
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Simpsons.
The Simpsons. Not much to say about The Simpsons. It's a number 12, still, and
it's still going.
Still going.
Yep.
So let's see. Moving further down, we have a Dark Horse. What?
On the regular show comic by Boom Studios, it's being illustrated by Diego Jordan, who is a compatriot of mine. He's Uruguayan, but lives in Chile. He's a nice fella.
Cool.
It's pretty warm there.
What? Sorry?
It's a pretty... Never mind.
Oh.
Anyways, that's actually interesting. But let's look at Dark Horse Comics here. We got Star Wars number 0 of 8, the Lucas Draft. The
Lucas Draft?
Gold Signature Edition. Ooh.
Can we stop having comics numbered number 0?
Well, number 0 is the issue where we see... number 1, to explain...
0 of 8.
To explain what the Star Wars Lucas Draft is before George showed this draft to his now ex-wife, Star Wars was going to be very different.
Yeah.
And so, you know all the Jar Jar shit and all that shit? No, that was always with George, and, and if you read the original script, which I did, like, in the early aughts, I was just curious, and it's been out there for years, everybody's known about this.
Yeah, I had long theorized that Lucas was never good, and as soon as this draft shit started coming out, it pretty much confirmed everything I thought.
Yeah.
All I needed to see was the interviews with anyone else in the the staff or cast, and I knew immediately that he was not the.
What I love is who is publishing this in Dark Horse. It's Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He fucking has his. Anyway, I'm not gonna say that.
Well, we do have more Kevin Smith down the line here because Batman 66 meets the Green Hornet number 1. That's actually written by him and Ralph Garman.
Yeah.
They don't do that live reading session at all.
Ralph Garman of the Joe Schmo Show, by the way.
Let's see here. Moving down, we have... DC
and Hollywood Comics. Babylon.
Yeah.
DC Comics, and moving on, we have...
you're not going to talk about Amikami Girls?
I mean, at least they're cute. You can mention that.
They're not...
Amikami Girls, Volume 2, Rise of the Brainiac.
They look like How to Draw Manga Girls.
Wow,
I'm
that
sorry.
Art is shit.
Yeah, well, the cover's not so good, but I've seen good art of these characters. I mean
there are, like, the Power Girl was really good, and the Catwoman was really good, but this
there
cover
was an Amanda Conner issue, right?
Huh?
The Amanda Conner actually did an Amikumi issue, I think.
Ooh.
Which
yeah,
is the
I
one
think she did.
I recall seeing a page which has Wonder Woman complaining about the Amikumi design for her suit, which was basically, you know, what's the word, you know, a G-string?
Chun-Li.
And Amanda Conner is also doing a cover for the Harley Quinn number 8.
Oh.
So, that's good.
Oh, yeah, I see that. That's excellent. Yeah, like, some of the Amikami girl stuff is cute, but that cover is just sort of,
yeah, it's decent designs, but
yeah,
doesn't
some
bring
of them
you
are
back for more.
Guilty pleasures.
I think the eyes are what's messing with me, is I'm, like, looking at those eyes, and it's, like, obvious that artist does not normally draw eyes like that, and so it's sort of
the big googly anime eyes.
Yeah, if you're not,
googly
like...
anime eyes, it's,
If you're not practicing
you
that...
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
Thank you very much, JP. I
that's
appreciate
a cover from Amanda Conner.
I do what I can.
So we have Dynamite Entertainment with Doc Savage number 8.
Alex Ross cover.
Yes.
Ultra Unlimited Virgin variant cover.
Well, it has the plastic around it.
I can never remember if it's Alex Ross or Adam Hughes I don't like. I think it's Adam Hughes that I don't like.
Why don't you like Adam Hughes?
I don't know. There's something about the way he draws faces. They just... it's like he overexpresses. But, like, Alex Ross is kind of similarly photorealistic, but he's actually better.
Alex Ross is more... Adam Hughes is more pin-up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Adam Hughes, though. I like... The women are really nice and chunky. I like them.
So, we have Red Sonja number 0, written by Gil Simone.
Again, episode 0.
Yes, but it's Red Sonja.
Does anyone care about, like Red Sonja at this point?
Yeah, to be honest, I like to look at Red Sonja, but I've never had the temptation to actually pick up a book and read it.
Well, they did edit it, you know, like a mixed book here with Conan, so.
Good one, Pablo.
So, moving further down the list, we got some IDW comics here with Danger Girl.
Danger Girl? IDW?
Yeah.
I've been out of the game for long.
Rest in peace, Kirby? What the hell is that?
Cartoon Network Super Secret Crisis War number 2/6.
Oh, RIP Kirby. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. We also have some Transformers, Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Volume 5, trade paperback. Let's see here. Moving further down, we have some Image comics here. Not seeing anything I would pick up this week on Image comics.
Nope. I always like to recommend the Mercenary Sea because it's just like a old school.
I do not like the art on Witchblade now.
Who's doing the art?
You talking the cover or interior?
I think there's also another Uruguayan working on Witchblade.
The cover is just, you know,
Laura Braga.
Yeah, Laura Braga's cover is not making me feel.
Well, for one thing, like, it's very uninspired. The other one is just kind of like, I seen this before?
Yeah.
I mean, it's Witchblade.
I know. Yeah. It's just, you know, sometimes I expect something like really cool or interesting.
Hi, welcome to Published Comics.
So we have, speaking of Welcome to Published Comics, we have Marvel Comics, where we have all sorts of fun issues this week. It's
there's some all-new stuff.
All new.
Yep.
I almost gave up on the just because of the goofy art. They have an all new Ghost Rider, like it's just so cartoonish and exaggerated, but it kind of works. And for the simple fact that the new Ghost Rider is driving like a 76 Charger instead of a
motorcycle.
Instead of the motorcycle.
On that one, a friend of mine recommended it, and I started reading it, and it's pretty visually stunning, and I do like the character as well, so it's something I need to read, but it hasn't been edited around here, so it's hard to come by.
Yeah, so,
let's see here, we have, they're of course, you know, popular, you know, they're jumping on the movie, so Guardians of the Galaxy is, being published again. Of course, the team is pretty much, you know, the addition of Venom, Flash Thompson Venom on the team, you know, sort of will throw people who go to the movie, so.
Well,
they also, Captain Marvel's supposed to be joining the Guardians as well, so.
What the fuck?
Yeah. The thing is this, it's.
Carol Danvers is in space.
Well, Carol Danvers is already in space, and, you know, she is. The thing is this, I don't think they know what to do with her ever since they made her Captain Marvel and promoted her for Miss Marvel. I think they're like, because well, number one, she had an ugly ass.
I have an idea.
You know what it was? You go first, Neil, and then I've got an idea.
Yeah, I have an idea what you could do with Carol Danvers. Show her legs.
Yeah.
Here's
my thing. No, the reason that they did this was the whole point of like bringing back like a Miss Marvel and Miracle Man suit was to finally consolidate Miracle Man back into Captain Marvel. That was the whole point. It was about rights. And it wasn't about anything else. And so now they've got her and they're like, okay, we did that and we secured our rights. Now what?
The helmets they make her wear looks horrible.
Yeah. Or where she gets, like, the space mohawk when she's suited up like that?
Yeah.
What's up with that?
I like the space mohawk.
What I don't get is in her last...
From artist to artist. Some artists do the space mohawk justice, and others Not so much.
It doesn't look completely ridiculous when you look at Nick Bradshaw's art in the Guardian title, but everyone else, it just kind of looks silly. What the one thing that, I don't know why this bugs me, in her last Miss Marvel or Captain Marvel series, they gave her amnesia, and then the beginning of this new series, all of a sudden she's dating War Machine. Literally within three pages of the first issue, they're out necking in the shadows behind an aircraft hangar. And it's like, what? And then she takes off for space.
Moving on.
That's literally the progression of events.
Moving on past the Marvel comics, we have, let's see here, we got Rebellion with a couple of Judge Dredd graphic novels.
Yay!
We have Titan Publishing with some Star Trek magazines, which I know a couple people might want to pick up. Udon Entertainment with a Street Fighter art, 25 years of Street Fighter art.
Not verified by Diamond. What does that mean exactly?
That means that Diamond cannot verify that it will be released in all stores and cannot verify its sales numbers.
That's what I thought it meant. Bastards.
So,
waiting for my hardcover of that to come in.
So, before we finish up, we have JT's favorite line of comics.
Viz Media.
No, yeah. I'm talking about your favorite line from Xenoscope Entertainment, JT.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yay!
It's not that I hate it, it's just... I don't believe any man that says they read that for the story. I don't do it. It's like somebody telling me they read Playboy for the articles. No one does.
Playboy does have good articles.
Yeah, that's like...
I don't deny that. But I'm talking... Okay, when I say someone... I don't believe someone says they read it for the articles. I'm talking like back in high school when my friend... Oh, yeah, I just read it for the articles. Yeah, bullshit.
Okay. Yeah, nowadays, because it's all softcore, I do read it for the articles. But yes, understandable.
Well, even back then, Playboy had great articles.
Oh no, I'm just saying. Nowadays it's like, oh well, look, she's got a bush that she's showing me. Great, awesome. Anyway, yeah, but I believe you because, like, yeah, these covers are just.
It's the same thing. I got a friend of mine Campbell. Still. He buys Terror. Yeah, Sean Shen. Please, let's look at that one. I know. I got a friend of mine still buys Terror, Witch of the Black Rose, and if anyone tells me they read that for the story, I just walk away. I'm sorry. There's just no way you read that for the goddamn story. I'm sorry.
This was my favorite fairy tale as a child.
Warlord of Oz?
Anyways, while we're finished poking fun at the Cheesecake arc that should just be called Cheesecake Number 12,
nothing wrong with it.
Nothing wrong with it either, because people would buy it, and that's totally okay. But so we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll have the topic of the show.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and AnimationAficionados.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the internet's number one and longest running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Adkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the Geekcast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Come on, man.
No. What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
And now, back to the show.
And we're back, and we're going to talk about costume design and design theory. And let's go to the root of where this show originated, the new Batgirl costume, which I believe I've said was over-designed as fuck.
Yep.
And
pretty much.
What do I mean by overdesigned? It's well, I'm a bit of an artist myself. Not near as great as my other guests here, but I have some experience with doing costume design. And what I mean is there's way too many lines on it, way too many detail pieces. I mean, technically this thing has as many lines and pouches and pockets as, say, a...
it's hipster back.
Rob Liefeld.
As, say, a Rob Liefeld design, exactly.
It's except a Tetsuya Komura design. The guy does the Final Fantasy and Kingdom Hearts.
Zippers and buckles everywhere.
It is zippers and buckles and leather all over the goddamn place.
All that stuff looks cool. In moderation, it looks cool, but, like, well, if you're going to be drawing that constantly...
If it's a video game design, like, not... Which is always hilarious because you see the video game design and it's all, like, detailed, and then you actually play the game and it's not that detailed. That's fine because my brain has been accustomed to saying, okay, you can't do all of that in a video game. Nowadays you can, but they're not drawing it every time. There's a 3D model.
It's a nitpicky thing for me, like the whole snap-on, snap-off cape. Like, it's hipster Batgirl, to be sure. But when you look at, like, that image I sent you guys, like, a lot of times you see belts on female characters, they're at an angle because, you know, it's hanging off the hips and it's trying to look sexy. Here, they've purposely designed her belt so it's constantly at that angle because of the way it's strapped onto her leg.
Like, that's going to be, like, really hard to run with that thing.
Yeah, it's like, how does that stay in on
it? She's going to chafe.
Well, like, I can see her trip, like, sort of tripping because, like, what if it, like, slips a little bit lower down her hip? Because it's so low on her hip, I mean, that's going to fall off.
Exactly.
And if that's leather, it's not going
to... It's going to just slide right down, not to mention the fact that there's this extra belt. And that's the thing, there's this extra leg belt thing, and it doesn't serve any purpose other than to, like, support this other big pocket. I mean, this is probably your batarang purse. This is the epitome of a bad 90s design done in a modern... not to mention, you know, I'm looking at the character sheet. And the cape is held onto the costume by two buttons. Like, two snap-on buttons. It's like... Mm-hmm. It's like...
But
the artist is thinking, oh, this is such a great idea. If this is using real-world materials, blah, 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 aren't I smart, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
blah,
you know
blah,
what?
Blah.
On that note, let me play devil's advocate for a second just so I can shoot it down. A lot of people are going to be like, well, you know, this is a comic book, and, you know, these sorts of concerns don't really matter because it's in a fictional universe. And I'll be like, okay, then don't tell me it's realistic. Because that's like the one thing I keep hearing. It's like we're being more realistic and more true to life, and we're giving her a costume that's more like what a teen girl would wear. I'm like, then stop this arbitrary thing of, like, going back and forth between reality and fantasy. Either it works or it doesn't, and either you're gonna. I'm hearing feedback, and it was throwing me off for a second, but. Where was I? Don't go back and forth between these two things and try to intercept my criticism, you know, and expect me not to notice that you're doing that.
Not to mention that the design totally de-ages her. I mean, we're talking about a woman who's supposed to be in her 20s. And...
She's older than Grayson, remember that. And yes. Grayson now looks like 30 years old in his own series.
Yes, and not to mention, just going back to the design sheet, we see this stupid-ass... like straw man of boobs that no comic artist actually draws.
Yeah, someone said it might have been Pablo who said this, but or maybe not. But someone said, you know, you might as well put the Power Girl boob window on it because it's such a straw man. Oh, well, I forget who it was, but
go ahead.
When you talk about boob windows, then you think about when they put Sue Richards in that. Bikini-like costume in the mid-90s.
Oh, yeah, that.
With solid four, and then, like, a year later, they're like, screw it, let's just cut the four out. We need cleavage up in here.
But the thing is this, I'm seeing lots of other artists that will look at this, and they will start doing things like, oh, it's going to be a faraway shot, so we're not going to see her feet, because we don't want to draw these damn laces.
Okay.
Well, that's one of the
that's behind a table, so we don't have to draw this complicated belt.
Okay, the link I just linked to like, the Justice Magazine cover art, okay? Like, I want you to look at that and, like, then look at the design. Now, this is, like, that's... What the fuck? Like, people are already starting to just fuck up the, like, don't put boobs on her. Because every single drawing I've seen of Batgirl, this is really bothering me, is everyone treats it like spandex. Mm-hmm. When it says, on the design, leather. And I'm already going, there are going to be artists who are just going to treat it like spandex because that's what they've always done. This leather idea is stupid because it doesn't show up the figure, which is what the whole point of superheroes is. And the other thing is like...
Her ears are uncovered.
Well, and also, like, just, like, trying to remove her boobs is just sort of irritating to me because it's like, ooh, we're going to make her look like a boy because that's more feminist. And that's not really, like, I'm just sort of like, I don't... What people are more worried about when they talk about the comics is like, we would like more female characters, thank you. That's all I want. But I'm not looking like DC to do that anymore.
And this is probably a major question to have, you look at the headgear, like, how much spirit glue is she slapping on her face to keep that thing in place? Because it's basically a glorified toque.
Yeah.
It's pulled halfway down.
Okay,
again,
like, seriously? Seriously?
Again, it's like, this is the costume that's supposed to be realistic, except when it's not.
Okay, here's the thing. If someone were to take a picture of her and then, like, go home and Photoshop it, they could easily get what her face actually looks like from this.
Yeah,
it hides nothing.
Uncovered. Yeah, and the thing is, it's not even her ears are covered. The thing is, the big thing about the whole Bat family is every single Bat family cowl, and I'm stressing cowl, is a full head covering.
Like, she's going to get her ears burst out unless she's got, like, special, like, earbuds in there. Like, that's the whole point of having the cowl, too.
Hey, if you really, really want to get very specifically and realistic, I really hope she has some sort of Kevlar vest underneath that leather jacket.
Yeah,
because the last suit she was wearing was basically...
Well, it's probably leather weave inside the leather, Kevlar weave inside.
This whole design was based off of, this is something she could put together with stuff off the shelf, is what the creative team said. Another thing is, this is not a... You know, from their design, this is not supposed to be a form-fitting jacket. This is supposed to be a semi-loose jacket. And another thing is, it's a jacket. It's not a shirt. It's not a tunic. It's not a tourniquet. It is a jacket. So she's wearing another layer underneath it. And a jacket has movement independent of the wearer. When you look at that back shot, it's designed to have independent movement. So you're asking for two things that have independent movement on her body. No, three things that have independent movement on her body now. Her hair, the cape, and the jacket. The artists are going to fucking hate this.
Unless they have poser models that
are really detailed. Kitty Hawk's a great example because Yuki has long hair, ribbons, and a skirt.
Yep.
Yeah.
But most of the stuff close to the body is meant to be as tight as possible, so I don't have to worry about that moving.
Yeah.
I only care about this because I only care about those things fluttering. Yeah.
Yes.
Here, this person has not thought about any of that. What's clear is I'm looking at her cover that she did, and then I'm looking at the design, and it's almost the same pose.
Yeah.
It's like she hasn't really thought about this moving.
Exactly.
This seems like a costume designed by someone who doesn't draw comics.
Exactly.
This would look, okay, if I were at a convention and, like, what would happen is if someone wore this to a convention, they would do things to keep it in place.
Yes.
And it would look cool, and we'd all say, oh, this looks so cool. But
this is like hipster Batgirl for a costume party.
Oh, yeah, I'd be getting pictures of her. But here I'm just sort of looking at it, and I'm going, no, I don't believe for a second that's going to work. I mean, not to say that some costumes, you know, some costumes are possible, but they're usually magical.
And the thing is, you know, it's I hate ragging on this some more, but actually, that's a lie. I love ragging on this. the thing is, her legs, I mean, Barbara Gordon's supposed to have lovely, luscious legs, and it's like she's got, like, kid legs here.
Her calves are, like, puny.
She looks like she's 16 years old.
But her calves are puny. She's supposed to be a gymnast. It's like,
Oh my god. Have you noticed that her right leg is longer than her left?
Yeah.
That's what's been bothering me the whole time, is I've just been looking at that bendy leg, and I've just been like, oh my god, no. I mean, like, sometimes I goof. I know I goof, but that's just, no.
Well, there's something that an artist friend of mine from Argentina said to another friend of mine who had a more realistic style than mine, which is that whenever you're trying to do something realistic, that's when things get a bit more complicated, because it's another sort of commitment to everything, to the textures, to the figure, to the materials, to everything. Everything has to reach a certain degree of realism in order for it to work, because the slightest mistake you make along the way, something along the lines of like the basic solid shapes underneath the drawing, if it's not there and suddenly your leg bends in a slightly odd way, it pops out way more than if it was a more cartoonish design. And when it comes to this design, if I see this drawing of Batgirl out of context, I like it. It's like, if this was New 52 Year One, it's actually not over-designed compared to the other redesigns that we had at the first launch.
That's
but
true.
It's really something that like a pretender, a 15-year-old Barbara Gordon trying out by herself when she began, it makes perfect sense for me. But not for a character that it's, you know, well above her 20s and is a full-fledged Bat family member that actually had a suit that was Batman's suit on a woman's body. Yeah. I mean, no one ever complained about Batgirl's New 52 suit. It's the only redesign that we didn't care about. I mean, we only hated the fact that she was walking again.
Didn't hate the fact that she was walking, because that makes it sound like we're like, yay, she's paralyzed. I think we hated the fact that they took a character as someone who adapted to the information age and became a stronger character for it and more interesting character for it, and reverted her to her 80s/70s/60s version, because that was the version that the people in charge wanted, because that's what they grew up with.
Well,
yeah,
and also
now
just
they're going way back.
Well, they're honestly admitting that their audience is a lot older and don't really care too much about tech, and maybe are like getting nostalgic. So maybe that was the thinking behind that. But this makes me so angry, because like, okay, I'm a woman. I like it. I like to see female characters. It's pretty cool. Like when I play fighting games, it's like, woohoo, there's a female character. And this is just irritating to me, because she's going to go shopping and hang out with her friends and have a hip life. And I'm just like, it's going to be like Veronica Mars. And I'm like, just shut the fuck up right there. I liked her better.
So what you're saying is it's the return of Alicia Silverstone.
Yeah. It really
is. Oh, no.
This really feels insulting to me. It's like this is what you like, right? And I'm like,
And the thing
no.
is, when they do this, when they try to cater to women, it actually puts a horrible spotlight on the writer's mind of what they really think of women.
Well, I mean, Gail Simone, didn't she just get taken off the book after, like, they made such a big deal about her being on the book? And it was just like, what?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. By the way, please check the chat. I just want to say one thing: is the classic costume for Barbara Gordon Batgirl has stood decades and decades of time, because it is classic for a reason. It has very few details to it. It is iconic. It has a memorable silhouette, and it embodies who she was. And
yeah,
I think that's why it stood the test of time.
I think that's an important thing we need to talk about also. Like, we were talking about costumes and stuff, like silhouettes, like that. That's an important thing. Like at Marvel, they obsessed about like making sure that each of the characters had a recognizable silhouette, so that
that's why you have lots of villains with like light bulbs,
horns,
and forks and balls on their head, because
it identifies them. Well, and then like when I saw all the like New 52 designs and some of the recent designs they've been bringing out, they don't seem to be really following that. They just seem to be just sort of
adding more lines to it.
Well, yeah, adding more. Well, they want it to look more realistic because I think they think they're fighting against video games. Maybe, I'm not sure.
Well, the part of the problem with the lines on, if those are stitched lines, it means that these costumes are literally sewn from like hundreds of pairs of tube socks, because that's about as much material each sectioned off section is.
And yeah.
Number two is it doesn't really make sense anymore. I mean, the thing to remember about costumes is when they were originally drawn, they were meant to be like really tight fitting cloth, and the spandexiness sort of came a little bit later in the evolution.
When spandex actually came about.
But a good example of this is John Byrne's Man of Steel. There, you know, I think it's one of the early issues of John Byrne's Man of Steel trade paperback. There's a scene where Clark Kent puts on the Superman costume for the first time, and it's obviously meant to be cotton cloth, because you see how he's putting it on, you see how it wrinkles and folds as he's putting it on his torso, and you get a sense of, oh, this is cotton. And it's actually one of those moments when you start realizing a couple things about costume design. And for me, that was one of the light bulb moments, and that helped me do a couple of my designs.
Hmm.
And,
yeah,
go ahead.
Go ahead. No, yeah. Go ahead, Pablo.
Following the whole silhouette thing, something that you all said that always eventually comes into play when it comes to realistic design or not is that superhero costumes need to be identifiable. You know, they need to represent something. And they need to be recognizable, and that's because they're sending out a message with that. It's with in the Winter Soldier, you know, when Captain America needs another suit, he goes and uses his original uniform because he was sending out a message. He said, if you're going to war, you're going to need a uniform.
And it also is the best looking live action Captain America.
Yeah.
Totally. And
you know
the
what,
Neil.
I was just going to say, if we're transitioning away from Batgirl, I just want to say, you know, in case anyone out there thinks that we're overanalyzing the Batgirl costume, I just want to say that, you know, this costume looks like it was designed to address a whole bunch of things that weren't really problems, and in doing so, it creates a bunch of problems, and that's what we're kind of knocking, is that you've done all these things to make it quote unquote more realistic, and then what we're doing is saying, okay, in that context you've created all these new problems that weren't a problem before.
And I have one more thing to say. A lot of people I know that have been like championing this costume are saying that like the book is gonna sell like gangbusters. It's not. Unfortunately, this was a stock grab. This was basically, we'll introduce a new costume, we'll get our stock up, but there's no way that the book is going to sell. It might sell.
The first issue might.
The first issue is going to sell a good bit, but the thing is that the second issue is not. The thing is that this was just basically to get people to talk about Batgirl, get the stock up, and that's why I'm sort of also irritated about it, is you're going to ruin Batgirl just to get your stock up for 1 week, and then you don't really give a shit about the book. And that really, I guess, like, that's the reason I don't read a lot of superhero comics anymore, is because I've just gotten cynical, because I know that everything they're doing is just to play up to people who don't read comics.
Yes.
And that's it.
And I think that's a very good point. And like I said, is, you know, one thing is I've designed lots of characters, and I have a little bit of a comic book universe, and The listeners may not know much about it, but you know, I have a strong man named Ultra and a mysterious knight character, which I've recently redesigned thanks to Pablo and Kitty Hawk and Neil, because the thing is, the knight used to have this helmet that was very plain looking, and this is a helmet I designed years ago, and I was happy with it. But the one thing that struck me was, I think it was Pablo who told me, it doesn't look very, you know, medieval knightish. And I'm like, okay. So I went through this long process of trying to redesign it with one thing in mind, is I didn't want it too complicated. And I wanted it to be something that could, you know, easily be animated. Not because I think my characters or stories will be animated one day, but because I had this tenet of, if something can be designed and continually redrawn over and over again easily, then you've succeeded as a designer.
No, that's totally true. Because like when I first designed Yuki, like I was really like kind of disappointed in myself because I thought I hadn't made it detailed enough. But as I did the comic, I realized that I had actually done the right things with details and like not had gone crazy. Because like I look at things like shoujo manga and like especially like with magical girls, they tend to go completely insane with like all the details and stuff. But then when it gets to anime, it's like flat. So, I mean, like, there is something to, I mean, like, I would like to do some really pretty illustrations of Yuki with, like, you know, engraving in like, the girl thing. Yeah, the torso piece and all that. But, like, that's going to be, like, just because I'm having fun. But I'm so happy I did not do that on the actual costume. Because, like, Atsana, the cave Valkyrie, I always have to go back to the character sheet and look at it because I'm like, okay, I cannot for the life of me remember where does that earring go? Because I did an asymmetrical costume and I fucked myself. So I was so happy when she lost her costume. I was like, oh, I don't have to draw that anymore. Yay!
So were the readers.
Well, but, the readers were happy too, yes.
But, you know, like I said with, you know, to my example of the night, I came up with a design thanks to Pablo. Because I showed Pablo three different designs I did, and I said to Pablo, okay, I need your help, and I gave Pablo the guidelines I said, you know, something that can be animated. Again, for just the sheer redrawability, because my art skill is beneath Pablo's and probably beneath everyone in the room here, so I need something that I could constantly redraw and make sure it looks consistently good. And Pablo gave me a sheet of, like, 20 different designs. I'm like, I picked the one that was closest to two designs I did, and Kitty Hawk saw it and says, yeah, Ben, that's the one.
Yeah. Like, it was, and that's what you have to do with a lot of designs, is, like, just keep drawing them over and over. And I kind of wonder, like, nowadays, like, how many, like, I would like to see all the failed designs that they turned down for, like, for instance, this Batgirl, for instance. Like, it would be interesting to see what they decided wasn't a good design.
Yes. And like I said, this is part of my design process. Lots of my other characters, like, I finish a design and I'm happy with it, and I still have people comment on it, like my character Ultra. What he's wearing is basically like this blue bodysuit that covers his arms and his legs up to his neck, and he's wearing tights and in a white T-shirt.
Yeah.
And I've had people, including Red Ink, tell me this design is horrible. The T-shirt sucks. Well, Pablo saw it, and Pablo actually saw one drawing I did of it and said, Ben, I think this is the best you've ever drew him. Pablo, remember that?
Yeah, I do. I really like Ultra's design in particular. It's something...
Because I like the idea of the loose T-shirt on top, because it gives some sense of motion, because it can flutter without being too obscure like a cape, and I like that little bit of a design motif, because it's not super complicated, but it's just interesting enough to go, oh yeah, I see it, and that's why I did that. And so let's talk about Neil. You know, Neil, your character Dacian recently went through a costume change.
She's still going through a costume change because I haven't gotten to that yet. But
when the season is released,
well, possibly. But anyway, I wanted to. I keep hearing my own feedback, and I think it's someone trying to cut in. There's something to be said for having symmetry. You guys brought up symmetry earlier. The only thing that's like asymmetrical on her original costume was that neck flap. It's always, it's like either one, it specifically goes in one direction, and like, you know, every now and then I'll draw her a certain way and I'll be like, you know, it would work better if I flipped it around. And that's one thing I keep thinking about when I see the new Batgirls, because that stupid belt. It's like, if they draw her and then be like, you know, it makes more sense if this goes the other way. That's a problem, because now they have to redraw the whole belt. Whereas, you know, with my character, all I would need to do is just redraw that neck flap, and it'd be done.
The thing that I like about it is the neck flap is basically where the, you know, it unzips so the costume can take it off. And Neil doesn't draw the whole line all the way down to a certain point. He draws it like the line fades. Well, back to the Batgirl costume, you see these big old, big-ass zipper lines going all the way from neck to belly.
Yeah. And I could have done something like that. I mean, there's something like that on the on the Fairchild costume, and I think that looks really cool. But like, I'm like, that takes time to draw, so I don't do that. But
that line,
it doesn't really fade. It's just kind of like this thing that buckles over, and like over time, there used to be buttons there, but they sort of like disappeared because I got tired of drawing them, and they actually disappeared before I started doing the comic, so they were never actually in the comic. And there was actually supposed to be a seam on the side where boots that went away. And yeah, it's like so much got simplified before I even started. And it's like just this kind of simple looking bathing suit thing now.
Yeah, just imagine this Batgirl costume, like after 5 issues, we're not going to, because right now there's 3 lines going from neck to belly button for the whole zipper and the flap covering the zipper.
Yep.
I mean, this is going to get simplified like fucking just 2 hours.
Honestly, this costume is probably going to fade away after about a year or so.
It's going to get redesigned by committee, and it's going to start to resemble the original Batgirl. It's going to hit like a medium at some point. Kind of like the new Wonder Woman, how it's like kind of a mix of like, it's kind of like a compromise of both, and it's okay.
Well, there's one of the reasons why the suits are going to this more detailed line is because of the movie adaptations, actually.
Yeah.
Because it's like, whenever you make a superhero costume straight out of the original design that they had, it felt like, like a costume. And that was it, basically. It's like the 60s Batman. But eventually, sort of the solution that they found in order to sort of bring it down to earth was to add some texture and materials and lines, and in order for it so that whenever there was a close-up, it wouldn't look like, you know, just a piece of cloth, but something that would actually have some more interesting things to see.
Well, so let me tell you something that's actually an interesting story regarding that. Captain America's costume. There was a period in the 80s and 90s where someone's like, nope, that ain't cloth no more. That's chainmail he's... No, not chainmail. That's plate mail he's wearing. And I think JT remembers this time. JT?
Yeah.
And the thing is this. There were artists that drew every single overlapping scale.
Oh, God.
And the thing is, that was at the beginning. And then as the time went on, you only saw, you know, on the outline, you saw, like, the scales on the outline, like, on his shoulders.
Well, here and there, just to emphasize stuff.
Yeah, and then they brought that fading.
And I remember I think it was the Captain America series that started with a new number one post 9/11. I think John Cassaday was doing either the cover art and the interior at the time. I don't remember who it was exactly, but whoever did that basically had, like, the pecs and the shoulders. It was like there's all the blue, white, red, white, and blue, but the pecs and the shoulders, the artist made the effort to go in and draw each individual scale of this chainmail. So it's almost like he's got these thick blue feathers covering him almost. It just looks so bad.
Yeah, it's just to give an example, I just found a panel. It's this is more recent than I remember. Some artists still do the scales, and just imagine that headache. And it's like, ugh. And like I said, the thing is, most artists that after a certain point, they're like, I'm just going to do an just on the very outline, you can sort of see it. It's just going to be solid blue. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to torture myself.
They end up doing a lot of black is what they used to do.
But like I said, that's an example of, we need texture. And then after a couple of months.
I don't understand the whole thing. You can do texture.
Like, the thing is like, a lot of artists nowadays use Manga Studio, and there is this option for, like, tone correction where you can show points at which the tone should, like, curve around and stuff like that. I'm going to play around with this more because you can do feather textures and things like that. So nowadays, there's really no excuse. If you're going to use texture, then use a computer. You can totally do it.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not against texture. I'm just against, like, lots of fucking lines I'm going to have to draw.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never understood the need to use lines to come up with, like, the texture, because Sometimes you can just do that with the coloring, and it's easier to do it that way.
Wait, like, you can actually just make a texture. Oh, sweet. You could just make a texture for Batgirl. I've just thought about this.
Oh, my God.
Actually, nowadays, you could do that. You could make a texture for Batgirl and then wrap it around her every single episode.
And by the way, I sent you another example. This is an older example. And as you can see, like I said, this scenario is like, okay, I'm going to put some hint of scales here, but I'm not going to draw every single fucking plate.
Yeah, that's actually the only way you can do it, other than just making it black to hide that you're not going to draw all the scales. So why does he have scales on his legs?
That's not scales, that's inking.
Well, one of the things that
happens...
Not very
good inking, but it's inking.
I see a lot of cross-hatching. And those scales are basically him drawing like little tiny U's over and over.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Consummate V's. Consummate!
Like I said, I just wanted to like put it out there is when we were talking about texture, the biggest thing that came to my mind is Captain America's like plate mail armor that most people forgot about because they're like, fuck this, I'm not going to draw every single scale. I have a life.
Well, there was a time when Captain America skewed the chainmail for... It was the 90s, and everyone loved the Captain America power armor from the 90s. I enjoyed the design. I want to stress, I enjoyed the design. I by no means thought it was a good design. Cap Wolf was better designed than Power Armor Captain America.
He looks like the Tick.
Looks the Tick swallowed Iron Man and something happened, but yeah. But and this is just like my segment to things like
I forgot what? About that
oh,
shit.
You
forgot about Power Armor Captain America? How could you forget?
I tried to drive that from my mind because that. Okay, you've got to use this as the picture for the show because that says it all about redesigns.
No, that is awful.
There's one that's worse. There's one that's worse.
That is
what's
awful.
That been?
Armored Daredevil.
Oh, dear God.
No. Oh, God.
As Kitty Hawk said, thought she drove Power Armor Captain America for a mine, so did I think I... Look, he's got spikes on his knees that are pointing up.
What?
In case he wants to climb up the side of a building with just his knees.
Who designed this? Because I want to break their fingers.
I think, oddly enough, I think it was... I know he was... Scott McDaniel was working on Daredevil around this time, but I don't know if he actually had it. But he drew it a lot.
That is fucking terrible.
Yeah, and was this around the time that he gave up being Matt Murdock and he took the name Jack Batlin and he tried to fake like he could see
not being blind.
For the second time in his... Yeah, well, no, because it was like the second time he'd ever pulled that in the comics because back in the 60s he pretended to be his own twin brother. Oh, he's lost 5 cool points in my eyes now.
Let's talk about this because this is a perfect example of... Daredevil's a good example of a character who had the gamut of designs from god-awful, excellent, god-awful, god-awful, excellent. And
he's had like 3 different costumes. Oh, 4 if you count Shadowland.
But let's start with the yellow and brown costume, the yellow-black red costume, which was god-awful. This was back when Daredevil wasn't a ninja. Because when Daredevil started, it was called The Swashbuckling Adventures of Matt Murdock. Basically, he was a swashbuckler. He ran around, he was blind, but he was like a modern-day, you know, Errol Flynn saving the beautiful maiden.
Devil May Care.
Yeah.
Emphasis on devil.
And that was who Daredevil was. But his costume sucked like ass, because it was the... Do you people remember the yellow and black costume?
Yes.
His dad wore it.
It was made
and
from
eventually
the father's boxing outfit.
Yes.
Yeah. And then eventually the red and yellow costume was stolen by D-Man.
But let's talk about the evolution to the modern Daredevil costume, the red costume, which was designed by Wally Wood. And this costume was a single color, just red. That was the whole motif, was just red. It was simplified to where there was very few detail lines. The most detail lines you would have were just the horns on his cowl and his billy club holder on his leg. Everything else was just basically just that, just solid red. And that's where, you know, you have this beautiful silhouette, this lean figure. And, like I said, Wally Wood influenced and created the modern Daredevil before Frank Miller turned him into a ninja.
And not that was necessarily a bad step, just
everyone was stuck on it.
It's Daredevil. Well, for
Ninja kind of works with the whole swashbuckling thing, because then you can explain why he's leaping around like that. But you got to remember, this was Miller before he lost his goddamn mind.
This
so
makes
it's cool.
Sense. It makes sense because he's also a ninja, and ninjas can like work in darkness. So, you know, see, that I'm okay with, but like turning him into power suit, then it's like, okay, so why would he ever get out of his power suit? Now he can basically, you know.
And
for some reason, I've almost kind of sort of committed parts of the issue where he created the armored costume to memory, just because it was some really, really bad early Scott McDaniel art. And it's like Daredevil breaking into a lab, and there's like little bits of technobabble in the word balloons talking about like spider webbing being stronger than steel and, you know, carbon fiber armor, and it just, because they tried to give it like a quasi-scientific explanation.
They always did that, though. I posted a picture from Wally Wood's character design sheet that he created for Daredevil for other artists to use, and there was actually a close-up of the Billy Club that's not in here, but it is in my Wally Wood sketchbook copy that I bought. And the Billy Club has transistors in it because back in the 70s, transistors were big fucking deals.
Mm. They were.
Were they top hat transistors?
They were. And that's the thing is, like, same thing with Iron Man. Iron Man's costume had lots of transistors in it because...
I love stuff like that where it dates the comic. It's like, it's like when they had vacuum tubes and everything in cartoons had to have vacuum tubes.
Yes. And like I said, that's to be expected. But again, look at that design. Look at the simplicity of that design. And tell me Wally Wood wasn't a design genius. He was given a piece of shit, and he made gold.
And then
that's alchemy.
They armored up.
But that's... like I said, that's...
Should we just talk about the Jim Ballant Catwoman then? No, I'm going to say this. I loved reading the... and it was like 50% writing, or more like 40% writing. It's, well, yeah, like the mid-90s to 2000s Catwoman, like where they had... It was a modern update to some of the classic like purple and black Catwoman costumes. Because, I mean, you have like the 1940s version with the purple and the green, and she's like the thief with the cat of nine tails. And then you had like some of the really trippy designs that came out of the 60s, like where she had like the... bought like the page boy haircut with like the orange like go-go goggle glasses. You had the black gray costume that came out of Batman Year One. But my favorite Catwoman costume, aside from Michelle Pfeiffer, and again that's mostly because it's Michelle Pfeiffer.
I love the full arm gloves. I love that, and I also love the thigh high
boots. Like the purple
thigh highs
and black
are always great.
The gray one
like
in the
costume.
Animated series was good too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the Adrian Barbeau before she became goth and turned into an albino Catwoman.
Yeah, that fucking shit. Yeah, I liked the animated series one. It was just classy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I know Ben's not a huge fan of the Batman, but right. They used the Let it
she
go.
She has this big old puffy collar.
Well, it's kind of like what they were doing in the Kyle Baker Catwoman story, where she had like the more utilitarian leather costume with the goggles and that. But the Jim Ballant one, like the thigh high costume with the purple and that. But I remember the day my dad, he'd gone into town for groceries with my mom, and he came back. You know, he used to buy comic books here and there for me and my brothers, and he brought home Catwoman number 50. The only appearance in the series of the Iron Catwoman. She had Freddy Krueger or Lady Deathstrike extendable claws, forearm cannons that shot button bombs, and had a retractable whip.
Yep.
And she had like these giant. She had these giant smokestacks off her back that made her look like the Iron Man from Heroes Reborn. And she wisely had that thing compacted at the end of the issue. But who in their right mind thought that was going to last?
You know what? This is Azrael Catwoman.
Oh,
that's terrible.
Azrael.
Oh my god, her leg is broken.
We also have to remember Iron Spidey, who also left to punish this.
Everyone went through a power suit thing.
Captain America. Just saying. Yeah, and you know, like, Tony Stark was just like...
There's technically two Iron Spider... Actually, three Iron Spider-Man costumes.
It's like Batman was the only character that did the iron suit right, whereas they purposely made it a character you wouldn't like.
Yeah.
And made it so that the real Batman would come back and kick his ass.
Yeah. Well, and also when he wears the power suit in, The Dark Knight, he's like... That's like his final... This is final. He's not coming back after this.
That's true. Or Batman Beyond. There was old Bruce Wayne who wore the power suit.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool.
Based off of the Kingdom Come suit. But
speaking
of Armored Spider-Man, there you go.
Oh, from making him kind of anime Armored Spider-Man.
Oh my god. That's barely Spider-Man.
Yeah, and then there was the one where he created the black and silver armor for like one issue, but
Kane stole.
You know, yeah, no, that was like in like the early 90s. He used some.
Oh, he uses compacted webbing as an armor.
Well, and it had like that silver thing. They had it in like the Clone Saga episode of like the 90s Spider-Man cost where he teamed up with.
I remember
all those ones.
Yes.
I love those.
Hey, but see, the thing is this.
Yeah.
That actually fits with the Spider-Man character of
he's an inventor.
A bad guy he can't handle with his normal equipment, so he makes one-off equipment. Just like Spider-Man had a costume he made out of a rubber mattress to fight Electro once.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the rubberized suit. And then they had that again in the Amazing Spider-Man, like a couple of years before Doc Ock took over, where he started working at Horizon Labs, and he's got the Sonic Nullifier suit, or he's got
is the one that Kane steals and gets stuck in red.
If we're talking about Spider-Man redesigns, and this is one that worked, it's the Ben Reilly redesign. Now.
Oh, yeah.
I've said this before in conversations with some of my friends talking because, you know, invariably you talk about this costume if you ever talk about the Clone Wars. This is the only good thing to come out of the Clone Wars. I mean, it didn't reinvent the wheel, but it gave it a pretty good spin. And I do like, of all the 90s redesigns of costumes, like, you know, you have the Azbats armor, you've got, you know, the armored Daredevil. But this one, it took what works about the classic suit and just kind of expanded it a bit. And I really think this is a great costume.
I will say this one thing. It does not fix the biggest problem of the whole Spider-Man design. That fucking webbing. The only one to ever fix that was the black suit.
Actually, that's not quite true. The anti-electro suit.
Okay, that one as well. But I'm just saying that,
because
like...
it's made out of a mattress. See, it's a little bit looser.
Spider-Man's a great design, but it's just like... My God, the webbing.
Yeah.
The black suit is very powerful. It's highly iconic. It's great.
Well,
had to stop drawing certain lines on him, and what did they do? They forgot his armpits.
Oh, yeah, that's one of the things that were lost away. The armpits.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's such a 90s thing to give him, like, you know, the web shooters on the outside and the two dark fingers on his gloves. Like, I kind of like that. Overall, besides the design, the thing I like the most about this suit is how it added to Spider-Man's arsenal, like in the stories, because he had the stingers and the impact webbing, which Peter Parker would later make use of later on. But I love this for redesigns. But there's
But actually,
I want to talk about Hawkman for some reason when you talk about redesigns.
We'll hold off on Hawkman for 1 second because there's one other Spider-Man costume we have to talk about when we talk about you know, when we're talking about Batgirl. What Spider-Man costume stuck in the back of my mind the whole time? You know, leather jacket, gloves.
Darkhawk.
The final Spider-Man costume.
Oh no! Darkhawk is the ultimate redesign of Spider-Man.
Look at that. That is...
Fuck everything about that!
The fuck?
I thought Neil was about to go, Neil, smash!
That is, awful.
You don't know about this, Pablo?
I don't... What's
Peter Parker has a fever dream one day, and he dreams that he's in the future, and he sees himself on his final mission, and this is basically what middle-aged Peter Parker wears.
A Sergeant Pepper jacket? He just needs those, like, brush things on the shoulder.
The future is shitty.
Yeah. Why? Yeah. I mean, manga versus Spider-Man works better than this.
Yeah, but see, this is realism!
Leather jacket
is real!
The leather jackets are real, man.
I'm not going to get a t-shirt that says leather jacket is real.
Here's a redesign that I think all of us could almost universally agree is one of the worst things that ever happened to Superman. Superman 123.
You know what?
Electric blueberry Superman.
Let me say something. People rag on it, but if it wasn't Superman in the suit, it actually is a well-designed costume.
No, it is not. It looks so generic, and it looks like so many other superheroes I can think of, like especially like some independent 90s comics. It's a lazy design. It really, honestly, I've always hated this design. It's not just because it's Superman. It's just a very lazy design.
It's like if Livewire was a dude.
Yeah.
Technically, a woman wore this costume later on. She was called Strange Visitor, and she was actually the goddess Kim Set in human mortal form.
Oh,
but
okay.
That's another story.
But yeah, I've always hated Electro Superman.
Well, that's when she did the fusion dance of Superman.
It's Electric Blueberry Superman.
What happened in Our Worlds at War. She did the fusion dance with Superman before he became Super Saiyan Sun Dipped and pushed World World into the beginning of time. Yes, this really happened. Comics.
But I almost bought it
for a second, but then I realized he wasn't wearing a leather jacket, so that could have never happened.
Okay. Don't say that. Doesn't he wear a leather jacket now, Superman? He's got like some kind of collar thing going on nowadays.
That's because he's a Nazi.
Oh, well, yeah, of course he's a Nazi. Okay. I mean,
I'm sending you this link here. This is, honestly, it's a page from one of my favorite issues of Grant Morrison's run in Justice League. It has one of my favorite comments by The Flash ever. And this is pretty much the only time I thought Electro Blueberry Superman was badass. Where The Flash is, this is the guy who said he couldn't live up to his legend. He's wrestling an angel. I just have to put that out there.
Face.
That's a great face. But then there's Aquaman with his long-ass hair.
And his metal armor.
Yeah, metal armor and the hook hand and all the
metal shoulder
things.
Armor.
Actually, the thing is this: I liked the hook hand because it gave some concept of progression of time that yes, he lost a hand, but now he has a badass hook and that can turn into a liquid metal T-1000 hand too.
No, the only good version of Aquaman ever is the Brave and the Bold Aquaman because he is fun.
Outrageous!
You know, that's fun. That's the only way that Aquaman works is when he's fun. Trying to speaking of designs, what?
I'm pretty sure they're going to go with the 90s Aquaman design for the movie, given the casting.
Oh yeah. I think the thing is like with Aquaman, they need to just accept that Aquaman is ridiculous, and there's
the fish doesn't work here.
If they put him in the movies, he better have that power where he talks to fish and he goes.
He also needs to do the Adult Swim boogie that they always played like sometimes between shows. Like he go do 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 do. Yeah, it's wiggling his booty.
If they do. The whole boop, 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 like calling fish. I just hope that scene ends like that one issue of Justice League where he's summoned a swarm of fucking Megalodon sharks. It's like, yep, yeah, my powers suck. But here's something I want to put to you guys. The original designs are not always great. No. Case in point, Omega Man number 3, the first version of Lobo, who looks like a Gene Simmons clone in a purple and orange costume.
But let's back up a second.
You're right. Yeah, he's on to something. Because, like, original design of, like, let's go to, like, Oh My Goddess. Like, the original design of Bell Dandy and Erd and Skuld, you remember what those all look like.
He went through seven phases.
I know. And, like, like, we're not saying, like, that we're, like, in love with the old designs. I guess, like, that's a good point to say. We don't want things like this Omega Man Lobo, which is just, what the fuck is going on here?
No, we want the beer-swilling, cigar-smoking, fraggin' biker from...
No, I'm sorry, I just saw the Prince of Persia Lobo, and I'm sorry, I gotta do this for a minute. Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you!
You feel better now, Kitty Hawk?
Yeah, I know what this is about. Oh, isn't he pretty? Don't you love
him, girls? Twilight Lobo.
Yeah, fuck that shit. I want my bear who drinks beer and has a wonderful Harley, and we go around the universe kicking people's heads. Yeah.
And he sounds like Brad Garrett.
Yes!
Yes.
Because I'm sorry, that whole episode, like, my favorite bit in the Lobo episodes is where he gets blasted to the face by the security bot, cough smoke and fragger. Boom.
You know, this actually brings up another good point is, you know, talking about other DC costumes in the 90s. The thing is, you know, they wanted to remove the tights off of Superman, which is why they made this stupid new design in the New 52. And the thing is this, is you look at a tightless Superman costume in the 90s, the Eradicator Superman costume actually fits most of that bill without looking ridiculous.
It was clearly a 90s design, but...
Are you talking to the Eradicator with the Jubilee sunglasses?
Yeah,
the sunglasses needed to go.
But the actual costume, you know, it's a it's a Superman costume without the tights, and it actually works visually because it doesn't have that many lines. It's only two solid colors, and it creates a line of a line of vision straight to his chest, which is what the original costume did.
Yeah.
So it's actually not that bad of a costume, and this brings me to a similar point is something Neil said to me a couple weeks ago, which I thought was very interesting, is Neil said, you know, Ben, if you take off the jacket, the leather jacket, the original Superboy costume from the 90s isn't that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
That's true.
Didn't he end up running around without the jacket later on in Young Justice?
Most of the time he didn't have the jacket because the jacket was the first thing that got destroyed off of him.
Because, like, also animators like, fuck that shit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I liked the Young Justice Superboy. Actually, all the designs in that were pretty good, actually, I have to say.
So that's something else to look at is, like I said, is the whole, oh, we gotta get rid of the tights thing.
Yeah.
Is something that these artists already handled before. Much better artists than the ones that they have now doing the designs. Like I said, the Eradicator, you know, Last Son of Krypton Superman costume.
Oh, I want to say this about, like, the designing. We're not, like, sort of ragging on the artists. We're mostly just ragging on... We know that in a lot of the cases, like, the designs are, like... Well, at least I know this. Usually you have, like, a committee sort of telling you what they want. So they're kind of doing what they are being told.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel bad for the artists because I can imagine, like, in some cases they've got some really cool ideas, but then they're being told, fem that guy up or... make those boobs smaller or make it leather because of the movie.
Yeah, we've seen the previous Lobo designs, for instance. Some were pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But this is obviously we're trying to make him look like Loki. I mean, it's so fucking obvious that it just makes my blood boil because it's like, you're not going to make Lobo sexy. I'm sorry.
I like
Lobo, but that's because I'm weird.
And, you know, just to emphasize the point again, you know, the Eradicator Superman costume, like I said, is, you know, if DC's mission was get rid of the tights, you know, get rid of the
The trunks, you mean.
To get rid of the trunks, this would have accomplished it. And yeah. It would have been a simple design. And like I said, your eyes are drawn immediately to the S-shield, and it's not offensive. It doesn't have all these little zigzaggy bullshit lines that are the points of articulation on an action figure.
Yeah, the only thing I didn't like about the Eradicator... The only thing I didn't like about the Eradicator, other than the glasses, were the way the cape came off the shoulders. That always looked
weird. I actually
thought
it was kind of cool.
I didn't really care for that.
Yeah. But, I mean, later on, didn't they eventually, for a while, the Eradicator was running around with just the two-tone costume without the shield or the glasses?
Yeah.
For a while, and then he had a redesign where the Eradicator has this interesting quasi-Superman, quasi-Kryptonian costume.
Yeah,
with the
blue floaty bits all around his arms and whatnot.
Yeah.
He had kind of that's the one. He's more in line with the whole John Byrne Krypton-esque.
Yeah, which is kind of why I liked it, because it was going back to the John Byrne Man of Steel art.
Yeah,
and it makes sense since the Eradicator is a Kryptonian robot.
And he was also at this time merged with like the mind of a human, wasn't he?
No, this is when he was purged of that. He was basically all Kryptonian at this point. And he was reprogrammed to be good by Mr. Majestic in that brief crossover.
Well, and speaking of Mr. Majestic, I just want to put up, I think the Mr. Majestic costume is one of the better designs that come out of like Image Wildstorm comics, because this is the Ed McGuinness version, but it
still
evokes
a little
like.
Busy. I mean, you have the thing is, this could have been a lot
with the shoulders and.
Well, the thing is, the white lines on his thighs. If the white just cut off right past his knees, without the extra white going up his thighs with those lines and stuff like that, it would look a lot better and it would be a lot easier to draw consistently, because Ed McGuinness likes to pile muscles on top, and that's about all he can do.
That's still a lot of fun to read. I'm saying I like the design because it kind of evokes like a kind of golden, or more accurately, Silver Age kind of aesthetic. Because essentially, Mr. Majestic, for a while before he got super, emo, was kind of a reinvented Silver Age Superman in terms of like, how strong he was. Like, he could literally push planets out of the path of an oncoming galactic destroyer with some, magic tech gloves. But,
well, the thing is, he was also technically an alien warlord, and he acted as much like that as possible. And, going into different versions of characters, I gotta bring up the first Captain America, which I hate this story, because this story just was terrible. I'm talking about Red, White, and Blue, and Black. And because it has no basis in actual scientific methods. And the idea of, there was a black Captain America first. I don't find that entirely offensive in and of itself.
I like the idea just because of the whole experiments that they ran in Alabama, with all the black people.
And it's not like he actually was a Captain America. He just managed to cobble together some sort of disguise.
Yeah. I really like this idea.
But again, we talk about the scales and the scales return.
I think it's okay because it's sort of like he's a reflection of like the, Captain America is the ideal and he's the reality. Well, and it's
also,
a lot firmer.
There's been so many proto Captain Americas around. It's like the thing is, we'll find out they gave the super soldier serum tested on a cat, and this cat has
This actually has a lot to do with World War II, about like them running experiments with like gases and diseases and other shit on blacks in Alabama and down in the South, and then that back in like later after the World War II, testing drugs on them and stuff. So
the reason Isaiah is not the first.
Isn't the first. But this is when I heard about this one, I was like, that's really interesting. Because it's really playing into the darker side of America during World War II. Because like Captain America represents the more happy, like more patriotic sense, and so it's kind of cool.
I'm talking about proto side.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a different thing.
But he has the exact same backstory. Is he was an early experimentee of the Soldier Serum.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to point out is that this is kind of cool because it's like going back to something really dark in American history where they would take blacks because they were considered not human and experiment on them. And that's really kind of cool to bring that in because it's sort of like, anyway, we can talk about this on another show. But
yeah,
anyway.
I know. But like I said, it's just, you know, talking about other...
Yeah, I know. I get what you're saying is that this isn't the first, but I like that aspect. Anyway,
yeah. Her, this is all. This costume is, sucks too. So I just.
Oh well, I mean, I'm looking at this and I'm just like, oh, okay, kind of. I don't. It looks kind of like something else I've seen.
Well, for Protocide's backstory is he was a guy who had who was given the Super Soldier Serum before Captain America was.
And yeah. I know that story's not original. Yeah.
And he basically, you know. Went crazy and decided to go against, you know, he was put into a coma for almost, you know, for all these years, was brought back out by, what's the name of Hydra. And they said, hey, you know that scrawny guy you saw? He replaced you, by the way. Go get him.
He's basically like a slightly different version of Nuke.
Yeah.
Who was like another version of Cap.
But like I said, that's pretty much the backstory is, like I said, is Hydra woke up and said, hey, you remember that scrawny guy you saw? But yeah, he replaced you, and this is...
and
go get him. And there was also, you know, while we're at it, U.S. Agent was actually the best... you know, actually, technically the U.S. Agent costume isn't originally a U.S. Agent costume. It was basically the Captain. Because what happened was Captain America was stripped of the title Captain America and stripped of the shield. And he decided, okay, I'm not going to stop being who I am. I'm going to be the Captain now. And he took the name the Captain, got a different shield, and, you know, and he teamed up with Tennille.
That's a lot of setup.
No, the Captain was a real thing. But
I know.
But we get it, Ben.
But basically, after the Captain became Captain America again, he gave his throwaways to... the guy who replaced them, and he became U.S. Agent, who, you know...
Who was originally a super patriot.
Yeah.
Super patriot.
I remember that issue, because some guy lands on the top of the Washington Monument with a mini nuke, and sees it on the news while doing one-finger push-ups, just decides, I'm just gonna go save the day, and then they gave him, like, the black Bucky, and... Yeah, and... Didn't eventually U.S. Agent get his costume got redesigned and he was basically a Judge Dredd ripoff?
Yes.
Huh. He had this horrible, horrible design. Well, everyone was horribly designed in the Force Wars comic. It was the worst drawn comic I've seen.
Oh, I remember where he had like the energy shields in both gauntlets.
Yeah.
You forgot. Okay, you forgot one. There was a time when Captain America. He also one time. You know, had the name stripped from him again, and he decided, okay, I'm now, what was it, Nomad?
Yeah.
You remember
that was like back in the 70s, 80s or something.
Yeah. But Nomad was really, really, you know, it's because Nomad, you know, when Captain America was known Nomad, he gave the costume to someone else, and Nomad's whole thing was he was an anti-terrorism superhero.
Oh.
And, you know, when Nomad lives, terror dies.
Is this like in the 80s or something?
Yes.
Sounds like very 80s.
80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
In the 80s, everyone was in the time. That's when Thor started letting his beard grow and also got the mask and, well, Spidey's black suit. And we also had Iron Man's silver armor. That's one character that had many redesigns.
Mohawks on Storm.
Oh, by the way, I sent you Nomad's costume.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
It was the 70s, so every guy had to have the open chest down to his navel. And
it was a sexier time.
Oh, speaking of sexier time, we have to talk about the, you know, Cosmic Boy's costume.
Do we have to talk about female Thor? We haven't even talked about that.
This is like the third or fourth time there was a female Thor.
I know, but this one. We haven't talked about this one.
Oh, but I have to bring up Cosmic Boy's costume, please.
Oh, is this the one where it's... Oh, dear Christ. What is this, like, about male empowerment or something, and they can be objectified like women, or... The fuck is wrong with people?
It's the 70s. They were all on drugs back then. That's the whenever I see anything and like people are like, what the fuck? My explanation for anything before 1980 is drugs. Mm. Everyone was on drugs. Because that right there is drugs. That makes no one who is in their right mind designs that. Not even to be sexy. That's just I'm trying to think.
It is so sexy Kitty Hawk can't think.
It's just more like I think they were trying they thought like
you see it looks ridiculous on a man.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they thought like, well, I like it when it's on a woman. It'll look great on a man.
He doesn't have any boobs. That costume makes no sense.
Well, I mean, it's kind of it's striking. I mean, you'll remember that. And like I said, it's the 70s, and everyone was just that things were crazy. Things don't make sense.
I'll say.
Look at the costume. No. The costume that girl's wearing. That's like with the rip on the side. What's going on with that?
That's light last or whatever.
Yeah, but still, like everything in this picture, even the characters behind him are, like, crazy looking. Anyway.
It looks like they're all doing aerobics or something.
I know! What the hell's going on? I think they're getting... Well, they're fighting, but I don't know.
They're stretching out first. They don't want to cramp.
Yeah. Yes,
maybe that's, no. Maybe that's what was on TV. They just took a screen grab and greased it.
Yeah. Now... Oh, you go, Neil.
Oh, I was going to say, that's assuming they even had VCRs, which in the 70s, I guess they wouldn't have.
They would have.
They would have been the size of a mini fridge. But
they could have had some, but not many.
Yeah. Now, just putting this other one here, it's the 90s redesign of the Scarlet Witch, which, along with the Spider-Man, like the Ben Reilly Spider-Man, better. I think this one it's not perfect, but it's a lot better... Mm-hmm. than the design she had in the Iron Man costume, where she's wearing like half a dress and some lingerie, and they thought that was appropriate for Saturday morning cartoons.
Always appropriate, but that's as much as I'm going to say, because I'm dropping my smoke bomb, because now I really have to go. I actually stayed more time than I was expecting.
Okay.
So,
but before you go, Pablo, one more smoke bomb. There was a time when someone went, Zatanna needs a superhero costume.
Ah, I remember
the snakehead thing.
Oh yeah.
Oh dear
God. The one with the snake.
Oh my God.
What's that?
It's not terrible.
You know, it's better than the one she's got now, where they put the fishnets on her arms.
What she's wearing now is actually like the revamp of this one.
Yeah.
Which they gothed her up.
Diaper. But I have to go as well. I just realized how late it is. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, we should wrap up then. Let's wrap up. I hope you all enjoyed listening to us talk about costume theories and some of the reasons why some of these costumes don't work.
Did we talk about costume theories? It seemed like we just bitched about bad costumes.
We talked a little bit about like silhouettes and asymmetrical.
There's a part
two
in the future.
A superhero design costume is make it something that people can identify. That you can tell which superhero is which, that sort of sends a message
that's Wolverine. That's not like that's Beast holding a fork.
And
it simple, stupid.
If you're designing costume for a major a publication, design it so that as many artists as possible can draw it, and don't draw this specialized thing that only one artist is gonna draw. I.e. with like lots of lines everywhere and pouches and zippers and buckles and everything.
And along the lines of Kitty Hawk's Keep It Simple Stupid, I give you guys Nightcrawler's costume. You cannot fuck this up.
That's true. That's a beautiful costume.
Yes. Okay. He's circus folk.
Anyway. Here's a hint. One more hint. If you can't get it right, just make it all black and then you don't have to draw details.
Yeah.
True.
but one more final story is sometimes a mistake in another artist doing the design can help the original realize, oh my goodness, I should have done that.
A good example of this is
when Eisaku was working on the crossover kill, he drew Yuki once with a red skirt, and Kitty Hawk was like, oh my gosh, I made it red.
It was really a nice addition. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyways, let's wrap this up. This is Euros Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
With TV's Mr. Neil.
And Kitty Hawk of Sparkling Generation, Valkyrie Yuki, SGBY.com, your one-stop shop for sexy fun.
I'm Pablo Prino, and we're saying good night.
Good night.
Night.
So long.
Farewell. Yeah.